This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 2nd, 2022. Happy New Year! I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 219. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. What lies ahead in 2022? Mario Canseco of Research Co. and Andy Yan of Simon Fraser University join me to look into the crystal ball. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or are you glad that 2021 is over and hoping that 2022 can't be nearly as bad? In British Columbia, natural disasters and the pandemic, as the NDP government struggled to manage both. Don't get me started on the cost of the Site C Dam, now more than $16 billion. It's double what it should have been. Living in BC never gets cheaper. It also means bring cash. In 2022, Metro Vancouver property taxes will be hiked 3.5%. You gotta pay for those North Shore sewage plant construction cost overruns. BC's carbon tax increases to 11 cents per liter in April. Of course, 2022 will be the first full year of the new $10 Freedom of Information tax imposed by John Horgan's NDP. BC is far from perfect, and we cannot become complacent. But things could be much worse. As we look out into the world, concerns that Russia's Putin will invade Ukraine and China's Xi will invade Taiwan. One or the other would spark a trade battle, sanctions, and maybe even war. Rather foolish at a time when the world needs shots in the arms to end this pandemic, but nobody loves to exploit a crisis more than a greedy dictator. There is a month left until the Beijing Winter Olympics. Why not keep Canadian athletes safe at home?
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. This is the big deal feature on the first, the Breaker.News podcast of the year 2022. And to consider what could be happening in 2022, I brought together a couple of esteemed gentlemen, Mario Canseco of Research Co. and Andy Yan, the director of the city program at Simon Fraser University. 2022 is a civic election year in British Columbia. Of course, 2020 had the snap provincial election. 2021 had the snap federal election, but we've got it on the calendar in October of 2022, the civic elections here in British Columbia. The two biggest names that we got to watch out for: Vancouver Mayor Kennedy Stewart. Will he get another term in office? Surrey Mayor Doug McCallum. Will he get a term in jail? Mario, go first.
Well, the numbers are certainly not fantastic for Doug McCallum. We've seen his rating drop into 30% back when he was at 50% a couple of years ago. A lot of people in Surrey wondering if it was all worth it. A lot of promises that were made. Certainly an election that he won where we had a very low voter turnout. And I think it would be definitely interesting to watch if the center right can get its act together. If we have a situation where you have a couple of candidates who are like-minded trying to defeat Doug McCallum, if he is on the ballot and if he is able to not go to jail, then the situation will be a little bit easier. Vancouver is an interesting dilemma because we have a lot of candidates from the center right, which are essentially cannibalizing a lot of the support that could go against Kennedy Stewart. There's rumors, of course, about other people who might be running for mayor from the center left. But given the situation that we have right now, the number of candidates who have already announced, it would be fair to say that it would be a monumental surprise if anybody who has already announced that they're running for mayor were to defeat him.
And Andy, Kennedy Stewart, does he stay in office? And Doug McCallum, does he go to jail?
Oh, great question. I think that it's really, I think the kind of dynamics within the region that I think are kind of shaping their kind of electability or their ability to stay an incumbent. I think there's, of course, the kind of factor of being an incumbent and the kind of like, you know, the couple points that one naturally has just becoming a known name. But then I think, of course, the kind of remarkable challenges ahead. I actually truly think that, you know, we are in the winter of discontent, if you will. And, you know, the son, daughter, or non-binary son of York has yet to really emerge in this kind of question. And I think that it's going to be some pretty pretty I think dynamic things. I think that in one way, on the Twitter sphere, you know, there's one interesting position saying that the actual real candidate for mayor for Vancouver may have yet to be announced. Mind you, time is ticking, but that, you know, will we see it within the first month of January that we see that the kind of major candidates, if you will, from the center left emerge instead of Kennedy. But then at the same time, I think that actually Mario, I think with some of your work, he's polling relatively strong, I think, considering the kind of policies that he's had to enact in terms of property tax increases, as well as I think some of the kind of policy choices that I think that this is really going to be the kind of the race into the election into the fall. Now, that all being said, I think that, you know, the mayor of Surrey, I think, is going to face some, I think, pretty big questions. I mean, in terms of really having very inconvenient issues come up in terms of kind of legal issues. But then I think that it's really going to come down to how the other candidates who are going to run for mayor of Surrey are going to appeal to a very dynamic and diverse population, and, you know, how that person is going to be able to connect with that electorate on top of what Mayor McCallum has done. But of course, very quickly here, I think part of it is actually, I think the shout out to perhaps the mayors around the region that I think have provided a level of civic leadership. I think about Jonathan Cote, I think about over in New Westminster, I think about Linda Buchanan over at the city of North Vancouver, Mike Hurley in Burnaby, that I think all through which, Brad West, I think that they all through which have provided a level of civic leadership that I think that's going to be interesting to see that, well, actually now there's going to be a level of stability when it comes to civic government. So, I mean, some pretty interesting questions moving ahead, but I think that, you know, between what Vancouver and Surrey's going to be facing, it's at this point, I would actually say it's a little more ambiguous.
And the BC Liberals are choosing a new leader in February. Who will be the next leader? Is this Kevin Falcon's race to lose? Or is there another candidate who you think can come up the middle and take the leadership of the BC Liberals and become the new opposition leader in Victoria?
I think it's both, Bob, because there's the expectation that because Falcon is so well-known, former minister, somebody who has a lot of support behind him, especially when you look at social media and the type of money that his campaign is managing, it's certainly his race to win. It's complicated in the sense of the way in which people elect the leader of the Liberal Party. And we went through this process that gave us Andrew Wilkinson when you had leaders who were definitely better liked, such as Diane Watts, who ended up being everybody's first choice, but not necessarily everybody's second choice. So I think it's still a very open race in that sense, because there might be many BC Liberal voters who do not want to see Kevin Falcon as leader, and they are starting to figure out how to go about their votes. Who do I give my second place vote to? Who do I give my third place vote to? If we have the same type of situation that we saw in the last election, where Andrew Wilkinson was nowhere to be seen in the top three at the first ballot and then ended up being the leader. So it's definitely too early because of the intricacies of the race. You know, we've lost the cleansing ability of the convention, of having people walk through a room and endorsing another candidate and having that level of support and having that beautiful moment at the end where everybody comes together. This has already been decided. It might be a good show for television, but it's out of the hands of the delegates because there are no delegates. There's just a ballot that is going to be counted as the night goes along.
Andy.
Within Kevin Falcon's race to lose, it's really, you know, the affiliations to Christy Clark and, you know, the various kinds of concerns that have still, I think, kind of continued on since the Clark regimes, and really are there further skeletons in the closet that have yet to really kind of drop? I think that, you know, part of this is going to come into, I think, the ongoing, I think, inquiries into any money laundering and the kind of relationships, I think, that I still seem to be rather ambiguous. And I think that there's going to be, I think, really another race that's going to be involved is really how much British Columbia has changed. And I think that part of this is really how the province has changed, even even for like the last, let's say even since the last census. By the way, this is next year is a census year, so you know. Datamis is coming, that there are going to be six major releases talking about really how much British Columbia, how much Metropolitan Vancouver, how much all the municipalities has changed. And I think that really we've seen a lot of kind of dynamics in terms of various municipalities, as well as ridings change in terms of density, in terms of, I think, economic, cultural diversity, which I think makes a dynamic through which any new Liberal Party in the kind of history, the kind of political history that it presents, I think that it's actually going to be challenging for the Liberals to, I think, run a campaign that they used to run into this kind of new environment that, say, I think the NDP have kind of really cut their teeth onto in terms of understanding the kind of new demographics, the new economics of really what's happening in the Lower Mainland, in British Columbia in general. So I think that Falcon is not a shoo-in, but then I think that it's also going to be, as Mario has talked about, a conclusion for which is going to be determined by its process.
And on the other side of the aisle, the government side of the aisle, Premier John Horgan had a difficult end of the year. He says he'll be back early in the new year from his throat cancer treatments. He already has his MLA pension. He already has his 2020 record NDP majority victory. Of course, 2021 was a difficult year with all the natural disasters and questions about how the NDP handled it or mishandled it. But do you think that John Horgan will announce his retirement in 2022 to start an orderly transition to the next phase of the BC NDP? I just want a yes or no answer here. Will John Horgan announce his retirement in 2022?
I don't think it'll happen. Aside from the situation that they find themselves in, and it would certainly be advisable to give whoever comes in more time to prepare for what is coming, especially with a BC Liberal Party that is going to be coming out of a convention with a leader who is going to be ready to go. But I just don't think that's going to happen next year.
Andy?
Don't think it's going to happen, but the issue is actually how this might actually set up an environment where the NDP grasps defeat from the jaws of victory. That I think that we are in this environment. Like, I mean, let's face it, what will determine all of next year, whether you're in the civic or the provincial levels of government, it's going to be COVID. It still is COVID. Like, this is not going to disappear. And I think that, you know, how the public will respond. And indeed, yes, indeed, we did have a provincial election in the middle of this pandemic. But then now we're moving down that Greek alphabet. You know, we're down over to, you know, from to Delta and over to Omicron. And really, I think how that is now really, I think, shaking some confidence, adding questions through which I think, does it open doors for the Liberals, or does it kind of begin to really kind of shake a bit of the NDP confidence? I think those are again going to be some really, I think, tough kind of questions moving ahead, because I think that it's going to be the Liberals who are going to have to provide an excellent argument towards why they can provide an alternative in provincial governance. But then at the same time, with the NDP, it's going to be talking about really what their accomplishments are, for which they certainly have made, I think, a certain levels of strides in terms of housing, in terms of really governance. But then at the same time, I think tremendous challenges, I think, ahead of us in terms of climate change, in terms of decisions around resources, in terms of really our relationships with Indigenous developments. And I think that it's all, I think, going to be, I think, really, I think, going to be connected towards really what's going to happen with this level of leadership in the NDP, but which I think Premier Horgan, I think, you know, I think wishing him a healthy recovery is really, I think, is going to be a big issue of whether they see themselves as part of a overall legacy in provincial government, or as a kind of in for, I think, what was a great line from the NDP NDP governments, in for a good time. So, you know, some pretty interesting, a big question ahead.
Yeah, and 2021 was also the year that that Ray McGuire from Trooper retired and let the band go on. So we'll be having a different voice sing that song. Four First Nations plus the mayors of Vancouver and Whistler got together and did a public announcement late in 2021 to say that they're exploring a bid for the 2030 Winter Olympics. They want to get their ducks in a row and make decisions at each of the councils so that they can go forward to the Canadian Olympic Committee sometime in 2022. There were too many reasons to say yes to the original 2010 bid in the late 1990s. Are there now too many reasons to say no to a 2030 bid? And do you think Ottawa and Victoria will get behind this like they got behind the 2010 bid?
Well, it's complicated for a wide range of reasons. The success when it came down to the implementation of the plan for the Olympics happened because there was a very good relationship between the federal and the provincial government. When the announcement came about the new bid supported by the City of Vancouver and the Four Nations, we didn't see a lot of movement from the provincial government, not even a tweet saying, this is interesting, let's explore it. Here we are, give us a call. This would be fun. Or, hey, look at this beautiful picture. There was nothing. And this certainly suggests that the government right now in Victoria is not looking at this as a very serious proposition. We didn't see a lot either from the federal government, nothing that said, well, this is interesting and this is part of reconciliation and this is something that would be important for the ministers in charge of this, who didn't actually say anything at all. So maybe just the situation is not where it used to be. You know, when we ask people whether they wanted this to happen, this is way before the announcement of the Four Nations and the City of Vancouver and the City of Whistler, what used to be a very high level of optimism at the 10-year anniversary of the Games became a lot of skepticism. And we had more people who questioned whether this was the right time to do the Olympics. Certain problems that we didn't have in the late 1990s when this push happened are with us. We have a housing crisis. We have a lot of people aged 18 to 34 who can't get into the housing market. We have an opioid epidemic, and the situation is definitely different than what it was when the original Olympics came to town. So I think there's definitely more skepticism. The survey data shows it. And maybe not something that can be countered unless all three levels of government get together and try to convince people that this is in their right interest. And at this particular stage, that isn't happening.
Andy, do you disagree or do you agree?
These are different times. I think the region, has changed since really the 90s and even up until after 2000. And I think that if anything, really the city and the city region after 2010, I think that it's a lot. It's different. I think that provincially, federally, I think, 2030, I mean, we could most likely still be facing the kind of overall financial obligations that we are incurring now, that we are still paying, I think, for the type of costs in terms of response to COVID. Heaven help us that we're dealing with COVID-29, right? But then I think that it's really, that this what we're dealing with right now in terms of capturing, I think, the overall effect of, or dealing with the effects of COVID-19, I think are going to be long, that's our other long-term COVID, if you will. And I think that the energy that's, I think, involved in terms of really bringing in this type of bid, capturing the kind of civic and, I think, the civic energies and spirits, I think, after this, I think is somewhat, it would be somewhat lacking. And I think it's also the fact that, really, how much did the 2010 Olympics cost us? I think that, the records are still, I mean, through your work, Bob, I mean, the records... Yeah. The records are still are somewhat ambiguous, if not sealed till I think what 2025 or something, or I mean it's still a question mark about how much 2010 actually cost us. So I think in that kind of veil of opaqueness, I think that really is going to cast a shadow towards this this role of the Olympics. And of course, it's going to be curious to see what happens to the Beijing Winter Olympics, in the forthcoming year. And really, because we saw what happened with the Tokyo Olympics, and it kind of like was was there an Olympics? It just kind of like, oh, it happened. And then like, oh yeah, sure. And then just kind of people moved on. And then you kind of wonder, like, you know, is ultimately the Olympics and these types of sporting spectacles in the a possible victim of the pandemic that we have yet to really kind of see. And I think that I share very similar opinions to Mario on this.
Next question. Will a Vancouver sports team win a trophy in 2022? It doesn't happen very often, but will a Vancouver sports team hoist a trophy in the respective league in 2022? If so, which one and why? Andy, let's start with you.
I hope it may be one of the various Little League baseball teams that have emerged in our region that, you know, they through which, I mean, to be young in a pandemic and to give them a break, right? Give us some level of cheer in terms of youth and sports is where I hope that there is a breakthrough in championship. I don't necessarily follow sports as much as I should. Yeah, sure. I mean, go Canucks, go Lions. I'll join whatever bandwagon there is. But that really, I think that it's with the hope that our youth and their sports activities really give a have an opportunity to shine, I think, is really one that I'm hoping for.
And Mario.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I think it'll be the Vancouver Warriors of the National Lacrosse League. They started the season with 2 wins and 1 loss. They're in third place in the West Division. I think they'll have a shot, certainly more than what is expected from the Whitecaps or the BC Lions. And my hope is that the idea that everybody has about singing Whoomp, There It Is, to refer to the current head coach of the Canucks, does not become Don't Bring Me Down, Bruce by the Electric Light Orchestra anytime soon.
And of course, the Canadians. The Vancouver Canadians. I mean, one ought to give, I think, a shine to the Vancouver Canadians, really offering, I think, a value to families to see professionals, a level of professional sports that I think that I think if anything, I hopefully the Canadians, yes, will go all the way.
2021 was a year for space tourism. It's only a matter of time before a British Columbian becomes a space tourist. And maybe 2022 is the year that someone goes up on Richard Branson's rocket or Jeff Bezos's rocket or Elon Musk's rocket. Who do you think it'll be? A, Seth Rogen, B, Ryan Reynolds, C, Pamela Anderson, or D, someone else? Who will be the first space tourist from British Columbia?
I think it'll be Pamela.
Pamela Anderson. So Mario Canseco from Research Co. says Pamela Anderson will be the first space tourist from British Columbia. Andy Yan, the director of the City Program at Simon Fraser University, who do you think will be the first space tourist from British Columbia? A, Seth Rogen, B, Ryan Reynolds, C, Pamela Anderson, or D, someone else?
I feel like Seth Rogen, the single most experienced person on that list to be high, as high into space, I think offers that type of insight that he's already run through several simulations of being at a high atmosphere. So I would nominate Seth Rogen.
The climax, the final question, this could be a tough one to answer, and we'll look back at this in 12 months to see how accurate we are. So here's the skill testing question. Which will go away first, the mask mandate or the barge on the beach? Of course, the mask mandate is there to protect us from the virus. The barge on the beach, well, it's there to give us some amusement and take our minds away from the pandemic and all the other problems that beset us. So which will go away first in 2022, the mask mandate or the barge on the beach? Let's start with you, Andy.
Oh, that's a real, that's, there's the answer, I hope. I hope that the mask mandate will go first. But, and I think the reality is in both, is in both, both examples. I think that they both are covering, I think, at certain level of entrenchment, both physically in the case of the barge, but then I think in terms of the kind of ongoing, medical challenges in terms of mutations, in terms of variants that really are, I think, centered around the fact of of an uneven distribution of vaccinations. And I think that until, I think the greatest line is that until we are all safe, none of us are safe. And that until we see a global strategy when it comes to vaccinations, I think that unfortunately these mask mandates are going to be here for us for a long time. I think that barge, I think with the kind of costs and I think with the kind of, I think challenges in terms of really who's going to be responsible, who's going to pay for the removal of that barge, that's going to be with us for a fair amount of time. So I'm curious what Mariel might think.
I think neither will go away in 2022. It's part of the problem, you know, the situation that we see. We were told, you know, vaccinations will happen and then the mask will be off, and it hasn't really turned out that way. And the massive cost associated with removing the barge is probably going to make it very complex in an election year municipally to say we're spending this much money so we can get rid of these things where people take pictures. So by the end of 2022, both will be here. And the first thing that is going to go perhaps in 2023 will be the mask mandates. I think the barge is here to stay because nobody's going to spend as much money as is required to remove it.
Well, that is Mario Canseco of Research Co., who joined us along with Andy Yan, the director of the City Program at Simon Fraser University, to look into the crystal ball at what will happen in 2022. Thanks again for being you. Thanks again for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast. Happy New Year to both of you.
Always a pleasure. Take care. Safe New Year.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Hong Kong Free Press, Stand News deletes website and wipes social media, ex-staff to appear in court as watchdogs decry raid. The online deletions follow the early morning arrests and raid of the Stand News office on December 29th. Around 200 National Security Police officers left with more than 30 boxes of evidence. Stand News is the second pro-democracy outlet to fold in recent months. In June 2021, Apple Daily shuttered after 26 years in operation following a round of arrests and the freezing of assets. Apple Daily was founded by media mogul Jimmy Lai, who is now in jail facing national security charges. In ABC News Australia, Canberra Indigenous leaders say protesters who allegedly set fire to Old Parliament House do not represent Aboriginal Tent Embassy. The doors of Old Parliament House were set alight for the second time in 2 weeks as protesters demonstrated outside. The fire is believed to have begun during a smoking ceremony that language custodian Caroline Hughes says was not sanctioned by local elders. The Aboriginal Tent Embassy has condemned the alleged acts of the protesters in starting the fire. In Mainichi News, funeral services to honor pet insects gained quiet popularity in Japan. iPet Group has offered insect funeral services since 2019, when it had only 10 inquiries. By the end of October 2021, there were 100. Most are rhinoceros beetles or stag beetles that were cared for by school children. To get a funeral for a dearly departed six-legged friend, people bring in the remains or mail them inside a special kit equipped with a drying agent and cushioning material. The insect is then buried in the Insect Heaven Graveyard in Hyogo Prefecture, where a Buddhist priest holds memorial services once a month. The remains are not cremated. Some bugs brought in even had messages attached, including, quote, "Thanks for coming to our home in such a tiny body," end quote, and, quote, "Please go to heaven. We won't ever forget you," end quote.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
Welcome to the newest Patreon supporter of the Breaker.News and the Breaker.News podcast, the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association, which is hosting Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson on April 26th in Vancouver. For information and tickets to the annual ICBA Gala, go to icba.ca. or call toll-free 1-800-663-2865.
In the Oregonian, Oregon's smallest, southernmost glacier has disappeared. Sometime over the past half decade, Lathrop Glacier in Douglas County disappeared. Lathrop Glacier was discovered in 1966 and was a little less than half the size of a football field. The chief suspects are climate change and the brutally hot summer of 2015. Since the 1950s, 15% of glaciers in Washington and Oregon have disappeared. The state's southernmost glacier is now the Crook Glacier on Broken Top Mountain, west of Bend. In King 5, these new Washington laws go into effect on January 1st. Food services businesses may only provide single-use utensils, straws, condiment packaging, and beverage cup lids after customers ask for them in order to reduce single-use product use and waste. Public schools in Washington cannot use Native American names, symbols, or images as school mascots, logos, or team names. Washington State's minimum wage will increase to $14.49 an hour, up 80 cents. The right to vote will be automatically restored to those with felonies as soon as they are released from custody. And a 7% tax on the sale of stocks, bonds, and other high-end assets in excess of $250,000. In the North Shore news, BC is home to the highest restaurant in Canada, and it will take your breath away. Located 7,700 feet high in the mountains, the Eagle's Eye restaurant offers stunning panoramic views of five breathtaking national parks. It's at Kicking Horse Resort in Golden, near the Alberta border.
The biggest sports superstar in Cascadia, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson, is coming to Vancouver on April 26th. Get in the huddle at the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association annual banquet. For information and tickets, go to icba.ca or call toll-free 1-800-663-2865.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
scientists who are seeking a cure for Alzheimer's disease, doctors and nurses who are caring for Alzheimer's patients. January is Alzheimer's Awareness Month in British Columbia.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 2nd, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on January 2nd in 1974, U.S. President Richard Nixon set the national speed limit at 55 miles per hour to save gas during the fuel crisis? Now you know.
Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Happy New Year!
Until next week.